Two, three, one.
Who's the best show here?
Tech Show!
Who's the best show here?
Tech Show!
Yeah, that's the best one yet.
I am short.
Pizza, pizza.
I use the bathroom.
Show time!
You were making egg foo young in the kitchen. Sushi.
It's a little thing, Tech Show, and that's fact. If you don't like the gas, you can stick it up your ass. Ain't no funny duddies that'll link it bad. The stream is go direct to DLNGS.org. And I see Linux Link.net. Bound Tech Show. Just in right there, puts the calendar just about to begin.
Your intro audio was all messed up again.
Yeah, I was going to say, is that on like Fox or something?
No, I know. I'm trying to fix that. I absolutely spent no time fixing it this week. I wanted to, but I was too busy. But anyway,
but you thought about it. So
yeah, I did. I thought about it like 10 minutes before the show. I'm like, damn it, I forgot to look at the audio again. Anyway, this is episode 972 of the Linux Link Tech Show. On the show tonight, you heard him already, Alan.
Hello, everyone.
We have Pat.
Going old school, baby.
Yeah, and that's it. The other two are now. We have Joel.
Hello.
And we have Joe.
I'm here.
And it's official. As of this past Friday, my wife is now a middle school English teacher.
I'm sorry.
Congratulations.
And she is busy as hell, which means that I have to pick up all the other slack in the house. Like driving my daughter to and from swim practice.
Ugh.
3 days a week. Gotta love it.
Well, it's gotta be fun.
Yeah, it is. It is. It gives me, you know, it's fun for her. She loves it. Gives me time to do some, you know, other stuff than hanging around the house.
You mean like crap. Going outside where there's all those people?
Well, this is indoor anyway. But yeah, I mean, I'm outdoors a lot. I do, but it's mainly around the house. This gets me off the property, off the fort.
Get out every once in a while, yeah?
It's good. It's good. Although it makes it difficult to do stuff like dinners and stuff like that with everybody working. Anyway.
Put peanut butter out there, jelly, and loaf of bread and say,
there you go.
Work on it yourself.
There you go. Get it yourself.
Best of luck.
something I wanted to bring up today was I had some good old fun with GitHub today. We are in a transition state at work between our old system and our new system. And our old system, which we're trying to move off of, that is the old CI pipeline of Jenkins, and our new system is our CI pipeline under GitHub Actions. But one of the things that we used to do, and we don't do in our new stuff, but in our old stuff, was tagging our deployments, which meant creating custom tags in the repo. And basically what ends up happening is when an application, a PR is merged into the repo, it automatically bumps the version, and a tag is created for that version, and then it's deployed out to our different environments, automatically goes to development east and staging east, and then every time there's a deployment, a tag is created in the repo, well, actually two tags for that each deployment. One is the environment, like development east, with the version and then the date it was deployed in the format of month, day, year, hour, minute. And then the other one is just deployment slash the environment name. And that is used, I don't know what the timestamp one, why they ever, I guess so they know when it was deployed. Nobody really uses it, so it's almost like a waste. The other one is used the one that just lists the environment. And the environment, they're all linked. So there's actually four tags. Well, in each of there's two other tags that get created when we bump the version. There's a version of the application is a tag, like 2.1710.0. And then there's also another tag because most of our, like, I think probably all of our applications on the old system were all dependent upon a library, a node library that was created called libg. So we have a tag in there that is that application's, that releases link to what version of libg it is, right? So when the GitHub version changes, there's a tag created for the version, there's a tag created for that version's libg version, and then each deployment gets two tags. One is just a generic deployment / environment. The other one's the same thing, but with the date timestamp put on there. And many years ago, when we set this up, like four or five years ago, we had a team called Quality Engineering, and they built a set of libraries for everybody to use. And some of those libraries did stuff like DNS management, and some libraries did stuff with the APIs. So there's a DNS API, and there was a tagging API. So the tagging API, you would just write in, you know, use that library, and you just send it, pass in the information, and it would automatically tag it for you. Well, about a year and a half, 2 years ago, the cutbacks with the pandemic going on, and you know, people were moving around, and they decided that they wanted to get rid of Jenkins, and they, because our Jenkins was hosted by a similar team, also another team, because we went from Team City, which was hosted, we ran our own Team City in AWS, Joel, there you go, in AWS, yeah. To Team City in Google, to Jenkins, that was self-hosted, to Jenkins hosted by another team, to that team saying, we're not going to host Jenkins anymore, use GitHub Actions, and we didn't want to move our application, old applications, because we're retiring them. So we're stuck with our own, like, everything is like kind of like just trickled away, and our chef server, they don't want to manage anymore. They want to get rid of Jenkins. They wanted to get rid of the API tagging API. They wanted to get rid of. They want to get rid of console now. This is like all stuff that we're using for the old system, and we're trying to get off, and none of it is being used for the new system. But we're stuck there until we can get everything off. So slowly each little piece of this is like falling into our lap. They're like, well, we're not going to manage it anymore. Here, it's yours. So it's coming back to us, but in a completely different way than we originally had it. So it's been a learning curve. Anyway, the API, the API tagging libraries, kind of, they stopped supporting them over a year ago. And I wasn't quite aware of this. Apparently there was a blog post, but their blog post was basically, here's how to transition from our API library to doing it in GitHub Actions, but I still need to do it inside of Jenkins. And somebody sent me some information anyway. Long story short is, a couple of weeks ago, I noticed that when we would attempt to do our application, to merge the PR in, that what ends up happening is it builds the test application, tests it, and if it's successful, it says so, and then you merge the PR, and then it goes through the process of building the test container. Well, it doesn't really need to build the test container because it already built it, but it'll retrieve the test container, and then it builds the production container. bumps the version in GitHub, writes that out to the GitHub repo, and takes that test container. Well, it tags the repo then after it writes the version, takes that test container, pushes it up to Quay, and then does a deployment out to development east and staging east, and then that deployment gets tagged. So what was ended up happening was it would fail to tag using the library, which meant that any steps after the tagging wouldn't happen. So you'd have to go back in and you'd have to manually like tag it. And that seemed to work fine. Like manually tagging it worked fine. Although it would throw an error in there and not like do the new relic. There's a whole other thing there. There's like some tagging a new relic, which I'm still not completely sure why we're doing that or who uses it or whatever. Anyway, so that would fail, which meant you'd have to manually do the deployment also. And then the tagging of the deployment. The deployment would succeed, and it would report success, but the tagging would fail. So you wouldn't see it until you actually looked at the output of the Jenkins job. But because it failed silently and it was still successful, most people wouldn't know. And that would interfere with our creation of a release candidate sketch script. Basically, what is happening is a release candidate is it looks at, you tell it what environment you want to create a release candidate from, typically a staging east or west, and then it looks at all the versions. The way that it does that is it looks at the tags in GitHub for that version. Right, it looks at what's it uses that like deployment slash environment tag, says what's in staging east, it's this version, and then it also gets the libg version off of those tags too, and then it creates a script and says this application, this version, and this is the libg version, and this is what's going to get deployed to wherever you want to use this release candidate script on. But if the tagging doesn't happen on deployment, the release candidate script isn't updated. When it goes to look, you're not actually getting what version is in there. You're getting what version was last tagged. So I ran into that problem a couple weeks ago where they were pushing out applications into production, and I expected to have like all these applications go out, and only two of them did, and I was scratching my head trying to figure out why. But and this is the reason. So what I had to do is I had to go in there today and pull out the tagging libraries and do it manually. And it was pretty fun, actually. I thought it was going to be a lot harder than it was. It turned out to be very easy on the first one. It was dead simple. I think that one, when I ran it the first time, because that's the tough thing about these scripts is you really can't test them unless you're actually doing a pull request into an application and merging that, which then is going to complete that whole process. And I was too lazy to break it all down and try and do it with just testing that to make sure it worked. So I ran it, and luckily, fingers crossed, it worked perfectly the first time. For tagging the pull request and the GitHub version bump. Now, the deployment tagging, on the other hand, completely different story. That ended up, what I thought would take me the longest was the version bumping one. It took me like 15, 20 minutes. The deployment one took me like 2.5 hours trying to figure this out. What made the deployment one a little more difficult was with the version bumping one, the Jenkins job was checking out the repo. So it was just using git commands in there. With the deployment bump one, deployment version one, I had to use the GitHub API, which isn't that difficult, but you know, it's looking all that stuff up. So what I learned through this, which was kind of annoying, is that I went and put all the what I thought was the right way to do this based upon the documentation I was reading. So what you kind of have to do is you need to do a call to the API to get that tag. And that's a repo GitHub database reference tag call and the tag name. from that tag name, you get a return JSON object that has the SHA for that tag in there, right? But then you have to take that SHA and you have to do a reference against that SHA to pull back the SHA that that tag references in the repo. So, like, say I'm releasing version 2.7.7.0. If you look at the tag, you'll see the SHA for it, which should match the GitHub version bump commit in the repo when you do a log. But if you do the API call to get the git tag, what you're getting is the SHA for creating that git tag. And you need that SHA to get the reference. And then that gives you the SHA of what it is that you want to tag to in the GitHub repo, that commit SHA. So that was a little interesting to do. And I got that figured out. Then you just do a create tag. And all that in place, and after, you know, figuring out what double quotes I didn't close, what double quotes I didn't escape, what syntax errors I had, what typos I had, after figuring, going through all that, I finally got it to actually do the tagging. And so it wrote the tag, no errors, everything looked happy, and my tags would not appear in the repository when I would go looking. But it wasn't airing out. So I ran the commands locally, the curl commands to do that tagging, and it said it was tagging. It returned the value, you know, the JSON object that was returned said it was tagged and everything was there. So I spent about, you know, 20 minutes digging around, trying to figure out why it wasn't tagging, testing a bunch of different things. And lo and behold, here's the important thing, right? If you're reading the documentation, it's important to read the documentation and not just skim through it thinking that you know exactly what needs to be done, right? Because right at the beginning of the GitHub create tag documentation, it says this will create a soft tag if you want to actually create the annotated tag. You have to do the reference follow-up, create the reference to it, and it gives you a link to the reference. So similar to how I had to take the tag and then get the tag SHA and get the reference, use that to get the reference for the SHA of the commit, you have to kind of do it in reverse. You pass the commit to the tag, create tag command, that creates a soft tag. Then you have to take that commit, that SHA from that tag creation, which is JSON object that is returned to you, and you have to pass it in to the reference, and that'll create the reference for the tag to the commit, and then it appears in the repo. And I was like, damn, that is great. And then I ran into the final problem of the night, and that was when I went to create the generic deploy/environment tag, it complained. It would say the tag already exists. It won't update the tag. It won't, like, if the tag exists and you try to create a new reference, it won't change the reference. You actually have to delete the old reference, the old tag, and then create that reference again. So all that was fun to learn. But that was not the only GitHub fun I had today. From the beginning of the day, another person, a developer that I work with, we're in the process of migrating sites from our old system into our new system, and there is a tool that he had to run, and that checks out a GitHub repo that has site mappings in it, and it updates it and then pushes it and runs that way. But he was getting an error that it was complaining that he didn't have access to the repo. And he was like, I know I had to create a token for this in the past and use the token, but I can't remember what I did. And nobody documented this. And apparently a couple other people who do this sometimes don't know what they did to fix it either. I wasn't completely sure what the hell they were talking about. But what it kind of boiled down to, and this kind of made sense once it figured out what it was that they were trying to do and how this was operating, is that there are two basic ways that you can pull down a repo. And I'm not we're not talking about using the API at this point. We're talking about just Git commands. So this was a Node application using simple Git. And you can interact with it either via SSH or HTTPS. So if you're using SSH, the proper way to do that is you have to create an SSH key, which you assign in GitHub, and apply that so that whenever you clone a repo, you're cloning it via SSH, and it's pulling it down that way. The other way that you could do it is to clone it through HTTPS. And then that's going to ask you, when you do that, for your username and password. And typically, that will cache that password for you, or it may you may have to tell it to pass cache it for you, or you could run the git config commands and set your username and password in there. So I'm typically use SSH, and I don't really run this application that they do, but it took a little while to figure out what had happened is his token had expired, but he wasn't exactly sure how it was that he was supposed to reuse this token. Because if you look through all the documentation, pretty much everything tells you how to create a token, but it really doesn't tell you like how it is you're supposed to use a token or set the token. And with this, what was happening is when he runs the application, it's running as his user account, and then it's using the simple Git library to perform the GitHub actions, which was doing a checkout of the repo, then an update, and a commit. Now, the weird thing was, it was allowing him to check out the repo, but it wasn't allowing him to push his changes back up. And it was saying that he needed his user information was not correct, because his token had expired. So basically, all he had to do was create a token. A new token, which he did. So he had this new token. And then what has to be done, and this is the thing I don't really like, is kind of like I don't know any other way to get around this. But what had to happen was he kind of had to check out that repo instead of using git clone to get the SSH way, the git address, he had to use the HTTPS. And once he did that, it asked for his password because his username was already set. So for his password, he just put in that token, which if you're using HTTPS is the recommended way. Instead of using your GitHub password is to generate a token to be used and use that instead of your password. So you put in the token, and then sure enough, after that, going forward, when it ran the application, it automatically did it because his token was cached. Now, I don't know. That's the one thing that bothered me is because I thought that if you wanted to cache it, you had to run the git config and then cache it, use a cache helper. But it didn't ask him to do that. I think he had set a cache helper before. I thought you'd have to delete the cache helper to create a new token, to get the new token in there. But apparently just updated it wherever we're storing a cache, and he was good to go. Because I had a cache helper too. Mine was OS 10 keychain. His was the same. So it just I'm assuming that what it did was updated the token in his keychain. Fun stuff, Joel. So just remember all those things when you have to do some stuff with GitHub.
Well, you know, I'm doing more and more with that all the time. But this week, other than the work stuff, I've been focusing on prep for my exam coming October 28th at a shitty time of midnight. This week I went.
Wait,
to...
your exam's at midnight?
Yep.
How to?
It's taken remote, so I just do it from the house. Which the only thing that kind of sucks about that is I'm gonna have to discombobulate my entire desk because you have to be on webcam at basically at the same time. Then you also have to pan your webcam around the room to make sure I don't have anything that I can cheat with.
Okay, so let me ask this, right?
Right.
You could have like another laptop or something, couldn't you?
Nope.
Like,
I'm not even allowed to have more than one screen.
Well, what I'm saying is, like, you could pan it around, and then you could slide that other laptop, or you could just have somebody walk into the room outside of the camera's view and put the laptop down, couldn't you?
You actually have to. I have two or three laptops all stacked around my work laptop. What I'll have to do is I'll have to take it with my personal laptop, then we're gonna take the any other computer. We're gonna take off the desk. Last time I took it, I also even had like a removable like cable management thing. They made me take that off, and basically it's just a 3D printed plastic clamp thing that had some cables hanging off of it, right? So I had to take that off the desk too.
Once you pan around and they see that you don't have any stuff on there,
you're still on cam the whole time.
Is the webcam just? But it's just like looking at your face, like you're on a Zoom call, right?
Correct. Yeah.
But like I'm saying, couldn't somebody just slide another laptop in right alongside you there, and you could just be like, you know,
where your eyes go to.
Yeah, I mean,
your phone's not your, and your hat. The funny thing is I think I have to go back and look at the exam prep, like for prepping your space. But your phone has to be in the same room as you, but it can't be within arm's reach. So it's basically designed so that if for some reason he can't interrupt you during the test, that you can walk over and grab the phone, which is just Pearson's a little bit draconian testing.
I get it.
Right.
But why midnight?
That's when the proctors were available.
Is that it? Like, that was your only choice? Midnight? What happened to Joel?
Pretty much. I'm here.
Oh.
I'm just pressing the wrong button. But yeah, that's when they were available. That's the only time I could find available.
Midnight.
On that date, or just that was the earliest you can
that
get?
That was probably the latest.
Oh, latest.
Because, yeah, this particular exam I'm taking gets refreshed like November 14th or somewhere around there. So it's either I take it now, get the cert, which does last a while, so it's not like I have to go retake it as soon as the new test comes out, you know. But, because they redo their tests every once in a while, so, but the course that I'm taking is through A-Cloud Guru, which A-Cloud Guru also owns Linux Academy, by the way. I think that used to be Chris Fisher's thing, I think. I can't remember.
I know he was affiliated with them, but
they bought things. His company that he created. Yeah. They bought
That's
Jupiter
right,
Broadcasting.
Right. And
then
right.
When Cloud Guru bought Linux Academy, they didn't know what to do with it, so...
Basically, yeah.
Let it go. I don't know if they sold it back to him, or...
Good question.
Just dropped it and...
But
he started it up again.
Lord only knows. But
I mean, I'm pretty sure he has it again, as far as I know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But any of it, the test, they have like a practice test I can take via ACG. I took the first one and I'm not prepared at this point. I will be by the time the test hits. But so far as the course goes, though, it's actually not just watching videos, but you get some interactive hands-on with the AWS console, as well as using some of the command line tools. It actually works pretty nice. One of the last couple labs I did was all circling around a network with regards to AWS, talking about things like Route 53, which is the DNS service they have. application load balancers, elastic load balancers, so on and so forth. So, and then I'm on the chapter of security, which the only lab they had in the security section was on, basically they gave you three different EC2 instances. They were all Linux instances, of course. But the third one is the one you're working on, and it had problems connecting to the internet. Plus, you also had problems connecting to it via SSH. So you had to figure out what was all messed up. Was it a route? Was it a limitation of the NACLs or network access control list? Or something on the instance itself, because you can apply security groups on the instance itself to allow ports in and out and so on and so forth. So you had to figure out what all those were. And I managed to figure out most of it before I started watching the resolution video. But it's definitely the only thing, and it's really a problem with any kind of cloud core. There's no one standard that all the cloud providers follow. You got AWS's standard. You got Google standard. And then you got Azure standard. All right. Those are the three main. And there's more than that. But so a lot of things are going to be very, in this course, a lot of things are going to be very AWS centric because it's all on an AWS certification. So some of the labs, like some of the earlier labs I took, one of them was dealing with moving data from an S3 bucket into a Redshift instance. Redshift is a data warehouse, I think. That's one of those things is straightened out. Amazon has a ton of services, and it's very easy to confuse one with the other because you got Redshift, you got RDS, you got Aurora. Those are all database-centric things. And then you got Neptune, which is for graphs. And graphs, not like Excel graphs, but graphs in the database standpoint. Then you also have I'm trying to remember there is a NoSQL option as well. That's kind of what it's making sure I have all that stuff straight. And the wild thing is after I get through that and get the certification, some of that other stuff I'll probably never touch because we don't use Redshift. We don't use, we don't use RDS yet. We might, but we're more likely to begin using Aurora than that because our SaaS version of the product already uses Aurora. Which Aurora DB is basically just hosting MySQL or Postgres databases. So that has been my experience so far. I've been studying for a whole week so far. I haven't taken another practice test since the first one. The first one I took was, I'll say it. I got 29%, so I got a ways to go until I'm going to be real comfortable with it. So I got to keep on the stick and definitely take the time to study for the exam. It's a $300 exam for this one. It's the AWS Architect Professional, which is the higher level of the two in the architect level. The other one is associate. So, but I'm taking the professional one because for some reason that's the only one that would come up when I went to go purchase the test. So,
your work pays for that though, right? If you pass?
If I pass it, yes, that's the key. If I don't, it costs me $300. So, friend of mine on Facebook, it's also in IT. He asks, "Is people, you know, the companies still want paper?" The answer to that is, yeah, they do, especially if it's like an AWS or any of the automation kind of stuff. You know, like you might want to go take a course on Datadog. and get. I don't know if there's a certification for Data Dog. I think there might be, but that's our monitoring tool that we use. Data Dog. We use that to write monitors and stuff, and we're adding more to that all the time. And the nice thing is a lot of the break fix stuff that we get is going to come to the same level as our customer support. So that's going to be an actual good thing, because what's going to happen is they're going to take anything that's mostly application specific, and we're going to remain more on the technical side and the engineering side. We're going to become more of an engineering team than we are today. Today we're not as, when we have engineers on our team, but eventually we're all going to be at that level. So hopefully, but and automating the shit out of things, because we get more and more clients. So, in a brief thing on my son, we just got him a new laptop, so I have his old one. It was running Windows 10, then I upgraded it to Windows 11. It was still molasses slow. So I loaded Fedora 36 on it, which I think that's the latest stable version. And it went on there lickety-split, no problems. I had to make some tweaks to the UEFI, because by default it didn't change whether it was the OS bootloader from using the Windows one to using the Linux one. So I just had to make a quick change in the BIOS after I got it installed, and it boots right into Fedora with no problems. So, and it's very usable, with exception of the fact I can't get short keyboard shortcuts for Mumble to work in GNOME, because the GNOME version on that version of Fedora is running on Wayland, and right now that's a known issue with Mumble. So
wait, that's his old laptop, right?
That's not his old laptop. Yeah. Yeah, his current one is a Asus VivoBook. He pretty much needs Windows for that, because I mean, he has to do all of his papers using Word and all that stuff. And I think I'll have to ask him if they got, because of his disability, once he buys the book, he can bring it over to Disability Services, and they can put an app on his laptop that will help him basically get an audio version of the textbook, so that he can listen to it versus trying to read it. So that's a good thing, once he gets other help because of his disability. So far, I don't know, he's doing okay, but I don't, you know, I tend to not try to get involved in that, because, you know, my wife will help him with homework all the time. I said, I'm like, he's in college, he shouldn't be getting help with homework. I'm not, don't ask me to help him with it. I can help him print 26 copies of a presentation he had to do on a shitty inkjet printer. Why do you have to print 26
copies? One for each
person
in the class?
See, that is my question. I think that's what it was. Is he had to print a copy of the foils or slides or whatever you want to call them for all the class. And I'm like, I looked at my wife and said, next time, he print one copy here, take his ass into campus and run the rest on a photocopier. I'm like, I'm not, I mean, because you know, this is dealing with the vagaries of Windows printing, which is not fun. My wife's laptop, I had twice, maybe she just ignored what I said, but for some reason she couldn't connect to the printer. And she's using Wi-Fi because they're doing this from the dining room table downstairs. And so I said, just delete the printer and re-add it. All right. I don't know if she ever did that, but once I did that, it worked fine. And she's like, why do I always have problems with Windows printing? I'm like, well, don't print. That's I just bought a printer for, you know, just to have in my office, so that if I did want to print something, that I can print it without bugging them, because the other printer we had was in my wife's office. But I'm like, You know, yeah, I print, the only thing I end up printing is non-critical stuff, like recipes. Like I found a crock pot recipe for sausage and potatoes, which is what we had for dinner last night. Smoked sausage, by the way. And
do you print that out too?
I printed that out. The recepies I will print out because
3D printed self sausage.
No, I meant to print the sausage.
No, I didn't print the sausage. No, it's accurate sausage is what I used.
I can see Alan getting a sausage printer, right, Alan?
There you go.
Nah, not me.
Sausage printer.
You guys talking about laptops.
My the candy printer. I actually got my printer taken apart, the bottom taken off the control part of my printer right now. It was one of the fans in there started getting noisy as hell, so I'm like, well, let me take the bottom off and spray the can of air in there. I might take the screws for the power supply out, move it out of the way, and spray it a little bit better, because I think it was just the dust buildup or something. Eventually, what I think I might do is order some fan replacements and cut the wires.
Put fans in it.
Yep. Get some Noctua fans that fit the dimensions I need that'll run a little bit quieter. But, I mean, they were actually running louder than the printer was. Like, ever since I upgraded the board in it to one of the ones that had the silent stepper motor drivers, that printer's been, you can hardly hear it when it's printing. You get no noise off the steppers.
Yeah, all you ever hear is the fans on it.
Yeah.
I don't actually hear the movements and stuff are very quiet.
Yeah.
Fans are loud, but I don't run it all the time. I'm not going to go through the hassle
the
of, you know.
You have the ANET, right?
No, I've got a Creality, the 3D
version. The Ender 3?
Yeah, the Ender 3.
Okay. Yeah, and they
still do have the ANET down it, but it's down in the basement, probably.
In pieces.
No, it's not in pieces, but I have no more use for it because the other one works so well.
Yeah, the Enders usually work really well. And not to mention the fact, if you have a micro center nearby you,
yes,
you have to print out a coupon online, but you can get the Ender 3 for $100.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
I try to stay away from there because it's only an hour away. I was there a couple of weeks ago. I got one of those $60 laptops.
Oh yeah,
which actually is not that bad. It's a Windows 10 laptop, but yeah, you know,
okay.
I'm using it for the ham radio stuff, which is where I saw about it.
Right,
and it's actually not that bad of a laptop. I mean, granted, it's brand new, so ask me in a year whether it still works. But
yeah, who was that by?
It is Evolve. Evolve.
Never heard of it.
It's like a Chinese thing. Evolve 3, Maestro or something like that.
May have to look into that. Well, I don't. That's the last thing I need to do. I got 1, 2, 3, 4 laptops.
I use it for the digital stuff on with the ham radio.
Right,
And it works really well. I mean, all you know, JS8 and all the JS8 call and all the other ones, I have no issues with it.
I need to get I'd like
outside
to...
of having to like you know. Sign in for shit to set it up, but I'd like to get past that.
I'd like to get a new DMR radio. Not that there's anything wrong with my GD77, although I am running Open GD77 on it, and that works much better than the Radio Oddities firmware. But yeah, for some reason, after I updated the code plug in it once using the stock firmware, I couldn't get the FM side to work at all. So I thought, well, Open GD77 is out, and it's actually relatively stable, and it completely works now. So let me try flashing that over to it. Did that, and that fixed – not just fixed problems, but it really made it a better radio. So – but the new ones
– I've got the Anytone.
Yeah.
My DMR. That's actually – it's a nice radio. I got no complaints with it.
The new ones seem to have options like color screens and stuff on it, which would be nice. I don't necessarily need that, but
this has color on it. I've got another one. It's a Kinect Systems CS580, I think it is, which is on my All Star system there. I've got too many radios hanging around.
Yeah. Here. No such thing. I'd like to get one of those R-Finder Android-based radios, but...
The Android that's running on those is like four versions behind.
Oh, at least. Right now. Yeah.
I think it's like Android 8 is like the latest one.
Right back.
Which is way too... And plus, it's a grand... You know, it's $1,000
$1,500,
yeah. Yeah, a phone that's running... You know, I mean, it's nice it's running Android and everything like that. And it works as a phone, I think, you know, a regular phone. Well. But you're still too, you know... Four versions behind now? What are we, Android 13 or something like that?
Let me see. 12 now? Yeah, let me see. I want to see what version they're having on it now. I'll have to look at that. But yeah, it is behind. It's not nowhere close to 13 for sure. But I would, like I said, wouldn't mind it. Definitely not required. But I also need HF going a little bit better than it is now.
I just had to put my antennas back up in the tree. Had a windstorm, yep. And it took down my 40 meter side completely on the one side and brought it down on the other. It knocked it down on both sides.
That sucks.
One I was able to hook up back without any problem. The other one I had to, and thankfully I was able to get to the rope in the tree. So I could pull a new rope up there and retie everything.
I did get a new I got a new whip for mine since I'm all QRP right now still. That's we'll do all the way up to, I think it'll go all the way up to 160, but it's basically it's like the MFJ whip. Actually it is an MFJ whip. But it's got a little pigtail that you would put in the hole for the band you want. Mm-hmm. So then you do got to adjust the whip in and out to get a good, match. So, but, hadn't had much time to actually deal with it because there's other stuff like that. And then of course my wife biffed the Traverse. So that's going to get fixed the week of October 10th, I think. So, and then I have to make sure that my wife makes sure she goes and gets the fan replaced on my son's car. You know, just months after we bought it, the AC fan stopped coming on once. So it's over a month that we started doing this stuff with that. And they did find that, yeah, they need to replace the fan. But the first fan they got was too noisy. That was the dealer saying it, not us. So they had ordered another part, and that was like a month ago when they ordered that other part. And it's in now. It's just now he's in class, so it's, you know, trying to find the time to put it in. And the upside is the one that's in the car is working just fine. So it's like, well, it's basically just one of those things where we should get it replaced before it just decides to give up the ghost, like, you know, in the middle of winter when he's trying to defrost the windows, you know, and stay warm. But, you know.
And why would you want to do that?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, it's only going to go. Yeah, it can go below zero.
Electric car, then you don't have to worry about it.
No, you just have to worry about being able to charge it.
How long the battery is going to work for.
Yeah, that too.
Yeah, but that's always an issue. But I'm hoping
you have a bolt, right?
I have a bolt. Yeah,
right.
I'm hoping mine once they get me in line for the new battery. I'm still waiting on that.
Oh, is that they were warranting the battery and replacing it, or?
Yeah, everyone out there basically is getting a new battery.
Oh, geez.
Whether you had issues with it or not, man, I had no issues with mine because mine was, you know, 6 months old.
I know the UK is looking into it, but all electric vehicles should have some kind of universal battery system. Just so in 5 years when your battery is dead and, you know, the manufacturer is no longer making them, you can still go out and get a new battery for it.
Yeah, that's probably not going to happen for a while.
That won't happen around here, unfortunately. But
no. But well, you should
if other countries put that into place and make it happen, then it's going to happen here as well, with or without the law, simply because, you know, manufacturers want to sell over there and over here, and they're not going to make two different battery versions just to screw over us.
It's just like the next version of the iPhone, the 15, when it comes out, will have USB-C because they have to have it by the time it comes out in the European Union.
Which is how micro USB got accepted back in the day, because they were going to enforce it forever ago, and then everybody just took it up anyway.
Except for Apple never did, but...
right.
But
well, I'm sort of hoping that my battery life will be close to what the Prius was. And I got rid of the Prius with 212 or over 200,000 miles on it. And didn't have any issues. I had many other issues with that car, but not with the battery, thankfully.
You probably have more engine issues than other issues.
Well, I mean, it needed struts all the way around, but the thing that killed it was it needed a catalytic converter.
You put 200,000 miles on a car, you expect problems.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, when I got rid of it, you know, when I traded it for the Bolt, it owed me nothing.
Right.
And I you know, if I was doing the commute back and forth to work all the time, I probably still would have been driving it. Because I think what really killed it was me stopping the commute. And then, like, all of a sudden, everything just sort of gave out within, like, a three-month period. All of a sudden, everything went bad on it.
You should watch
that. Plus, it's battery management. I mean, if you're charging 100% all the time, you have issues. Your battery, and the Prius batteries were like I don't think ever let the battery get below like 40 and never above 80.
Right.
So kept it in that like sweet range all the time.
But you were now. So your Prius, was it a plug-in version?
No, mine was like the second generation.
So. Right. Yeah. So you should watch the Epic guy has a Bolt.
Yeah.
Actually, I think his wife has it. I think he still has a Tesla. But he and his wife, when they went to the VCF Midwest, which is near Chicago, that's virtual. No, I don't know what VCS means. Retro Computing Festival in Chicago.
Virtual, Vintage Computer Fest.
Vintage Computer. Thank you. Yeah, Vintage Computer Fest Midwest. I should go to that because it's not that far away. But I think it's actually closer than Charlotte, believe it or not. But anyway, he and his wife from Texas to that in her Bolt. So they did do an overnight stay. But they did have to stop probably more than you would have had to stop with a gas vehicle.
Oh, well, you always will. I mean, right now, the infrastructure, depending on the highway you're on, the infrastructure, you don't just get off real quick and go. You got to go.
No.
You gotta find a Walmart or something that has. Yeah, it has to be planned out.
Right.
I looked at going out. I put for shits and giggles out for Ohio on there, and it would take four charging sessions for me.
Right.
Now my charging sessions, because it's a Bolt, the charge, even DC fast charging, takes
it's
longer than
short.
Any of the cars.
Well,
it takes longer because the Bolt maxes out at 50 or 60
kilowatt hours.
It's lower than just about every car out
there.
He
talked about that too.
You're taking longer for that. But,
right.
You build that into your system too.
Right.
What you
want
to do is probably overdo your charging.
Right.
Just in case you get to one, I for the hell of it, a couple weeks back, I was like probably like 40%, which is more than enough for me to run around on.
Right.
But we were going to be up in Allentown, and there's a DC fast charger up there. And I'd been there once before when I first got the car because I wanted to make sure that it did actually charge.
Mm-hmm.
But we went back up there, and it's like, there's four stations and all four of them are filled up. So you'd have to sit there and wait for somebody to come back and get their car off of it.
Right.
And they were all fancy cars too.
Yeah. He ended up doing the way he did this. He calculated it. He figured it only took him 2 hours longer than it would if he was doing it in a gas vehicle. I think he said he has a gas truck that he uses sometimes for longer trips. But in any event, he did do it, and they only figured out a couple hours. And when they had it plugged in, a lot of the time, I don't say probably most of the times, I think most of the chargers he had wasn't the fast chargers, if I remember right. Definitely the ones at the hotels weren't.
But most of the hotel ones are level two, and they assume that you're gonna be there overnight. And if you are, then level two you don't care about.
Right. But he also
mine up to from almost dead in 7 hours. So
yeah, he almost had I'm trying to remember. He didn't say where he got it from, but one thing he had in his car, probably something if you plan to do a road trip, probably wouldn't be a bad idea to pick up. But he had the converter that's the Tesla chargers to work with DC fast charge. So on the standard car.
Yeah, they're out there. They sometimes work and sometimes don't. So the Tesla chargers tend to know when, because you're calling back home, you're phoning home every time you plug in there, and they tend to know when something. Now, eventually, if he gets around to actually making the adapter for it and producing that for everyone, that would be something good to have, because the Tesla, charging network is, my old boss, his son. He has, I think it's a Model 3, I think it is.
Right.
He's been back and forth across the country like 6 times with it.
Right.
Coming back, because he lives out in California, they're coming back home to visit family and stuff. And he says, it really doesn't take that much longer to do.
Right.
Because, it's set up that, because you're on their own network, so you're getting, maximum charge at all times.
That's
basically like, they stop at a place, and he was saying that the first time they went out there, it was like the perfect, you stop like every 2 hours, which, a lot of people do anyways when they're traveling long distances.
Right.
You plug in the car, you get up, walk around, go to the bathroom, wash your face, whatever it is. And a lot of times at that point, because you're only taking like, a 20-minute charge maybe.
In some cases, it's even less. 80%.
And that brings you up to 80, and then you go down again, and, you get to the next one. Or maybe go 2 more down, however many it is, another 2 hours. You're down wherever it is. You plug in, clean up, get a snack, whatever, come back out, your car is charged again. Now, with a Bolt, you're not going to be able to do that. I think my minimum probably would be like 40 minutes in a charger.
Right.
But I think out to, it was only like 2, maybe 3 hours, not even three. I think it comes out to being like 2 hours more. Provided, of course, you don't get a charger that's bad and you have to go somewhere else.
Right. When he planned his trip out, he planned all the stops, whichever ones he stopped at, just in case the one he planned at stopping at didn't work, he planned that he had enough range that he can get through the next closest one.
You want to try to get ones that are earlier than what, I think it's a better route planner.
Yep.
Has a lot of information in there. But,
I think you might use the app. I forget what it is, but
It depends on who you're going through, in terms of the charger. They have their own apps too.
True.
But you probably want to try to find the ones that is before the one they recommend.
Right. And that's what
Take the extra time to go, I'm going to get, 40 minutes here rather than 40 minutes there. The one that the thing that they don't always tell you is when, they plan that last one so you can get to wherever your destination is, but they never plan where your destination is. Do you have one there? You always have to look out for that. I looked around for years, and the only DC chargers at the time I looked, that may be different now, was I would have to drive out to the airport.
Right.
And charge up there.
Yep. That's what he did. Yeah, he did that with his trip. He said there was only like a few times in his trip that he had to actually wait, but the longest he had to wait was like 15 minutes. Just for it to finish to get the rest of the range. But most of the times, like one of the first stops they stopped at was, well, it's around lunchtime, so they just went and got lunch. And by the time they got back from lunch, it was charged.
And,
so,
yeah, I mean, that's the idea. You know, with the rest areas, you know, a lot of like the Pennsylvania rest stops on the turnpikes, I believe, all have chargers at. You go in, you know, do whatever you got to do, and hopefully you have a charger there and everything.
Yeah, I don't remember if I saw them.
I couldn't. You know, I wouldn't actually use mine for a long distance like that, unless it was just me traveling somewhere. You know, in reality, the Bolt is a small car, and you know, it's crowded when it's, you know, when it's me and my wife, and put two kids in the back seat. There's no storage for anything.
Yeah, it's time to go get the minivan there, Alan.
Well, no, I'm not going to do that. No, the Subaru, I have an Outback, which is more than enough room if I need to have, you know. Well, I mean, we all fit in there, and I use the Bolt more than I use the Subaru, just because, you know, my fill up is $5, basically. You know, because I have the charger in front of my driveway.
Yep.
So, you know, it cost me, the most it's cost me, I think, is like $5 to fill up.
See,
I guess charge up. I guess it's a better word, not fill up, but charge up.
What was I looking at? Was I looking at the Tesla 3? Might have been the Tesla 3. I think the Tesla 3.
How long does it take to charge? That would be my question.
Yeah.
I have to be honest with you. I don't know for sure exactly what it is. Normally, if I plug in, if I do a trip to work, so I was doing that for about a month before the COVID stuff came back and they told us all to go back home. Let's see, when I got home, I plug it in. I think usually about 5 hours would get me back up to being full. 4 to 5 hours.
Okay.
And that's usually, you know, I was able to, and that's like, would bring me down about half. Because I only charged at 80%.
Okay.
That number was what the Prius did, and I was like, well, it worked really well for the Prius, and I don't really need the extra range because, you know, being able to plug in at home. And the two I also have right now, I have the software limitation on there right now, so I can't charge over 80 even if I wanted to.
Yeah,
until I get the new battery.
Yeah, that's with the Bolt, because it limits the charging.
But you can also set it up saying that, you know, there's a setting in there that's, you know, if you want to leave it, like, say, 7 o'clock in the morning, and you don't want to charge instantly, you let the car figure it out, and it'll go, okay, I need to start, you know, you plug it in when you get home, but if you're in that mode, it'll say, okay, well, I need to be ready for 7 o'clock, I'll start whenever I need to get ready to get to that point.
And then it doesn't stay at 100% for as long, so it's not causing an issue.
Yeah, and like I said, I never go above 80, just because that's more than enough. But that's usually 80% for me in the summer is like 225 miles, I think it is.
There you go. Yeah, I was going to say, too, I know the Bolt has it. You can also schedule it so that that it doesn't start the charge until you're in off for electric.
Yeah.
You get the cheaper rate. But the other one's
my charger pro. You can say, don't start for 3 hours or something like that.
Right.
My charger does that too.
Yep. So then, I figured out, like, at least if I got a Tesla 3, I could probably barely make it to my dad's house in Knoxville on one charge. I think I probably would stop in Lexington anyway, because I usually have to take a leak. You know?
Yeah, you'd hate to end up 5 miles short.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that and
you look at it as, like, you know, very rarely, even in a gas car, if you're going on a trip where you go, well, I'm going to run this all the way down to E.
Right.
So
you
just, you know, the only difference is, you know, practically every exit is a gas station.
There's another difference.
Yeah. Right.
It takes 5 minutes, maybe, maximum, to fill up with gas.
There's a time difference. I agree with that there.
Right.
But again, you know, if you're driving electric, you're building that into your time anyways. You've already accepted that you're not charging in 5 minutes.
Right. Yep. And that's usually at that point in my trip, I'm ready not just to stop the leak, but also to top
stop you get drinks his stomach and, off you know, a too. Snack or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So,
which
yeah,
might take like, an hour, maybe.
At most, right. Yeah.
But so, you're I mean, still looking at multiple hours to, you know, fill up
for
your
a longer
vehicle.
Trip. Right. For a longer trip, right. But, yeah. So, in that case, I would fill up from, like, what? Probably about 40 or 50, I think it would be by then, all the way up to 80, which would more than get me to Knoxville. So, the other problem with that, though, is, and this is something I could probably work it out. At least for the Tesla supercharger network, the only supercharger they had was, I looked at with their website, is on the west side of Knoxville, which is on the opposite side of town of my dad. But what I would probably do is work it out with Dad that, hey, Dad, if I pay for it, can I have you put, you know, a 220 line or whatever I would need for a level charger somewhere in his house, you know?
So yeah, that I can, yeah, you need to have that done, yeah.
Right, or something like that. And I wouldn't mind paying extra to do that for my dad's house, you know, as long as he's okay with me doing it, you know, for paying a guy to do it. But then in here, I would definitely, like, if I did get an electric car, Luke would definitely lose the parking spot in the garage. Right now, I don't park mine in the garage. It's in the driveway. He parks his in the garage because it's easier to let him do it than to fight with him right now. But if I did that. Now, see, the other thing that I'm considering, mostly because I
can't. 10 hours, 6 minutes to get out to Columbus from my house.
Right.
So, and I believe the last time I did it, it was 8.
Right.
Roughly 8. So, like,
yeah.
2 hours.
Right. But, one thing is really popular in our area, and I don't know if it's that way with you, Alan, but is golf carts. I don't know why, but street
no,
legal golf carts. Yeah.
Yeah, we don't have that around here.
Yeah, in our city specifically, it's really only in this city in the Columbus area that I've really seen it. But I have heard that it's getting more popular in other areas. But they'll have a golf cart, and that's what they use to get around town, because I can get from one side of city to another and not have to go faster than 35 miles an hour. And most of the street legal carts can do that. So, and you actually have the tags on them. It wouldn't save me anything registration wise, you know, or any of that. It would just be,
Yeah, but you live in Ohio. They basically allow
right.
cars that aren't falling apart to drive. As long as like the wheels don't fall
in
off.
In Ohio, yeah. In Ohio, yeah. That's like, I have a friend of mine that she recently moved from Athens, Ohio, all the way up to like Pittsburgh. And that's where she lives now, is in Pennsylvania. And she was bitching about the state inspection. I'm like, I know that all too well. When I was in college, when I graduated, actually up until I got married, I should say, my car was actually registered, you know, with my dad and my dad's name in Pennsylvania. So, and I was on their insurance.
There's a guy around here that actually has a side by side that technically a street legal side by side,
right?
But here, which it's registered in Montana.
Oh, wow.
And I looked up how to do that. You can actually, there's companies that will create a little LLC for you, and then the car is assigned to that, which means
interesting.
It's street, as long as it's legal in Montana, and it is legal for side-by-sides to be registered in Montana, it appears, that you
right.
can actually do that. You can take it anywhere in the country at that point,
right.
because it doesn't have to be, you know, it doesn't have to get registered in Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
Which I just thought was weird and...
Yeah,
it's neat. You know, you see one of those going down the street. It's like, what the hell?
Yeah, in Ohio, the golf cart in Grove City, I should say, they are legal, street legal. You have to, like you said, you actually have to go to the GCPD, have an inspection done on it, and you have to get a tag with the BMV. other than that, that's all you have to do, and you can register and all that in Ohio. So, but I've seen them.
So you mean I could get around all the inspections by starting up an LLC in a state that doesn't do the inspection?
Doesn't require that. Exactly, I guess you could, but you know, but it's a one-time inspection. They don't do a yearly on the golf cart, so that's a little bit different. But
you gotta get your golf cart inspected
just by the local police department. That's it. It's not Ohio DMV inspection.
Is that to drive it on the road or just to
drive
it on the road?
Drive on the road.
Why would you want to drive a golf cart on the road?
They do it. I've seen them parked at Walmart one day.
Because you're old and drunk?
Well, no. The idea, and I think it's getting more popular now because of the gas prices. But the question is I've seen both electric ones and gas powered ones. So some of them are doing it because it saves some money on gas because they can just plug it in. You know, others, I don't know why they're doing it. But I don't even understand more. Is occasionally I'll see there's a down the street, there's a couple that owns one, and I'll see the dad taking his kids for a spin around the block just for the heck of it. And I'm like,
of course, I've seen people get DUIs on riding lawnmowers, so
yeah.
I went to school with a guy who got the DUI on a bicycle.
Yep,
does that mean he didn't get his driver's license?
That's a good question. I was taken away from him.
That's a good question. I mean, you weren't in something that required a driver's license,
but it's a bicycle, so you have to obey the rules of the road, and that's right. What they got him on. And one of those rules says,
yeah, but what about the lawnmower from, though?
They're not street legal.
Yeah, that one I don't know, but.
But if you weren't on the street, you're mowing your lawn.
Right.
Wait. So
picked
you know
an
somebody
open
who
container
got
and a DUI.
Wait.
In your own yard, mowing your lawn, you can get a DUI.
No, I'm asking.
Oh.
The guy I was talking about that I saw get when he was actually on the street. So yeah, he probably deserved that crap. But I'm just wondering.
Right.
If you were mowing your lawn with a beer in hand, would you get an open container and DUI?
Yeah, that's a good question.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
You'd have to prove, they'd have to see you actually, like, I would say you probably would if you went onto the road to turn around to cut.
Right.
Like a lot of people go out and turn around and they got to make their lines nice and straight. At that point, they probably could. I mean, if you got one just being a real prick about it.
But, right.
I guess you could probably get charged with it if you were like you ran over your neighbor's kid or your own kid or something.
Something like that.
That R Finder radio is running Android 9, by the way.
Okay.
So still four versions behind.
Four versions behind.
Yeah.
You know what? You know what I think? Like, I don't think a week has gone by that Joel hasn't brought up the golf cart things. How soon until Joel's going to have a golf cart?
Like next week.
Yeah.
No, I'm not looking hardcore.
And a month later, it'll be up on blocks in his yard.
Nah.
Joel, if you got a golf cart, would you still get Uber Eats, or would you just take the golf cart down to the McDonald's?
I'd still get Uber Eats because I'm lazy.
Oh. Have them deliver it to your golf cart.
Yeah. Actually, I haven't gotten Uber Eats specifically. I've been doing Grubhub and DoorDash.
Oh, okay.
I may drop Uber Eats off my phone because I haven't used it for a while.
We should get Joel one of those really fancy, like, recumbent tricycles and convince him to always go through the drive-thru. With the recumbent.
Those things are dangerous, man.
Yeah,
it's not that they're dangerous. It's that everybody else is. Yes, exactly. Yeah. Like, I know several people around here that have one, but I would not ride one around here because people are stupid.
I don't think I'd ride one around where I live either.
Yep.
That's half the reason I got rid of my motorcycle.
Oh, you did? Fucking, I didn't know that.
Two fucking dumb people. Yeah, last year I got rid of it. It just 78 was just becoming way too dangerous.
The other reason I wouldn't have one of those recumbent tricycles, the nice ones, is because they're like $3,000 to $6,000.
Holy man.
Yeah, there's much as a golf cart. Well, actually, no, they're less than a golf cart. I'm at clubcar.com looking at golf carts. And the kind that are in the range that I'm looking at, it costs as much as a car. So I'm like, yeah, that's stupid.
Hey, Alan, did it get worse? Did 78 get worse after the pandemic? Like people just lose their minds when driving? Because it's like that around here.
Yeah, it was getting – it got worse. It was getting worse before the pandemic. I mean, they were having – I don't know. Every once in a while it goes through like spritz of like, you know, dump trucks turning over on a regular basis. It's like the fucking highway is straight. How do you fucking turn over a dump truck?
Dude, you'll have to check out what's going on in the DFW area this week, because like three semis have crashed and flipped. One of them, there's video footage of it riding a like the rail on the side of the road, flipping over and catching fire while it's dropping.
It's insane. Yeah. And like, you know, I took it out of storage. It was 2 years ago, because I really didn't ride it all last year. That's why I was just like, yeah, I'm just going to sell it. And, I didn't take that much of a loss on it. I mean, I got a fair deal for considering what I paid for it. I wanted somebody else to enjoy it, because it really wasn't, you know, it had 20,000 miles on it. I mean, it's a Goldwing. It was 15 years old. It was barely broken in. That's how much I rode. Yeah, but, you know, with the kids and everything, I wasn't riding on the weekends like I used to. My neighbors had moved away. They moved up to a place out other side of Allentown. And they had a barn and stuff, so I was able to store it for the winter up there. And I go up and pick it up, and I start driving home. I'm driving back home. And basically, you know, there's a video that on there. I almost get hit by some guy crossing the line. I've been on this thing for like 20 minutes and somebody's already tried to kill me.
Yeah.
And basically that year, I mean, that spooked me. You know, and I don't normally, you know, I've been riding motorcycles since I was like fourth grade. I've flown off the handlebar so many times I don't even count anymore. But they were all on dirt bikes and shit. So I was like, yeah, I don't really want to drop this bike. I really don't feel like, you know, ending up in the hospital. I rode a couple times that summer, but nothing like, you know, I think I used like two tanks of gas out of it for the whole summer. And then I put it away again, and I took it back out. Like, you know, I rode it like three times. And I'm like, yeah, you know, I'm just not into it. I'm just not, you know, I still would like to get one just to have around. You know, I want to get like a 650 Euro, you know, on off bike. But you know, I'm not going to go with the big cruisers on it, and definitely going back and forth on 78, even for that month I did, you know, earlier this year. It's like still, I mean, there's less cars because a lot of people are still home, but you know, people just like, you know, turning wherever, you know, trucks just moving, you know, all over the fucking road, driving in the left-hand lane, blocking people down.
That sounds like light. Extremely light casual traffic in Dallas.
Oh yeah, no. Compared to other places, it probably is. You know, I mean, 78 is like, you know, it used to be, you know, rush hour, and then it sort of opened up. But you know, there was a couple times that I've been on it that even like, you know, noontime, it's like, yeah, there's still a lot of fucking traffic on here.
Yeah, it's Columbus is worse than that area. I guarantee that. But, you know, I don't know, because I don't have to commute to drive. You know, the very supporting thing is when my company is allowing us to return back to the office, but I don't have one. I never have had one near me, so I never will do that. But they're not enforcing it. In fact, they've scaled back their real estate offices. I have to look and see if they ever finally opened the San Jose office that we had.
Yeah, I think the return to office is going to be a lot slower than most companies think.
Right.
Just because, you know, employees are pushing back as hard as they are right now.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's convenience, you know. You get to sleep in longer.
I get to see my family?
Yes, you get your family or, like, have lunch with your wife.
Basically help raise my two-year-old.
Right.
Which I wouldn't have seen before. Yeah. Right. I mean, even the month, you know, I only went back for a month, and it was basically like twice a week I went back in.
Right.
I got an email from my bosses, and it's like, he's like, I'm forwarding this from the guy from facilities. I was like, can we get those four offices or four cubes in the back corner there?
Right.
It's like, okay, I guess we have to start showing back up at work so they know we're actually there. But then, like I said, it lasted about a month, and the COVID cases in the company started going back up again. And,
right.
You know, an email came by saying, if you can work from home, go right ahead. I was like, okay, bye. Yep. That afternoon, my boss called me. He's like, yeah, you can go home. I'm like, I'm already on my way home.
Yep. Well, it's like a friend of mine. She still works for the college I worked for, but she works up at the Delaware office, Delaware, Ohio, not the state, you know. And she started driving to work, and there was an accident, like on I think it's 160 she drives over, she sat there for like 20 minutes, and then just decided she's just going to turn around and work half the day from home. With her,
I've done that before.
Right.
At the time, we weren't really set up as well right, as right. we were now. But hell, even that took probably six months before we got, you know, access to most of the stuff that we needed.
Right.
Yep. I finally have full access to everything now. And I only got that about a month and a half or so ago.
Right.
Because we had a server that we needed, one of our license servers had to be replaced. And we don't have access to it because, you know, we're not, you know, IT. But we don't have an IT person. So we were able to get one of the guys from the one of the other offices, who actually is the CAD manager for the West Coast, to do this stuff. And he was like, basically like, I need to have this. And it took like 6 months for him to get into our system. Because they just were dragging their feet on it. And then all of a sudden it's like, okay, they finally, I guess, I don't know what he said that they needed to do. Otherwise the server was going to, you know, because our licenses were expiring. And we couldn't get them redone on the server because it was like 12 years old.
Right.
Like, yeah, we don't support that version of Red Hat anymore. Because it's like 4.
Right.
No, don't laugh. I'm still running Red Hat 5 on my desktop.
Hey, I still got RHEL 6, so. Yeah. Yeah,
but all of a sudden,
damn,
I noticed.
Damn, that's old Red Hat, man.
Oh, yep. Yes. Yep.
And then all of a sudden, I noticed, I'm like, wait a second, you know, I can get to my desktop now. I don't have to use a server, you know, the servers in the room anymore.
Right,
I can go
right
to my desk now, and like, it runs just as good. So I don't know, they must have raised hell, and they just opened up everything. Because it's like, you tried to get SSH in there, and this is, like I said, this is going back at the start. And they're like, well, we don't want to open it up because, you know, that could compromise the system. I'm like, dude, you're letting me into the fucking building in the first place.
Right.
You know, I've had it for years. I think it pretty much, if anything was going to be, you know, taken away or suspect on you, I'd have already done it.
Right. Yep. But like, it's like, now, I do foresee maybe sometime in 2023 that we're going to have it in person. I know I'm kind of hoping they do their in-person at our user conference, because this year, next year, I should say, the user conference is in New Orleans. And I'd love to go there. Just because, not so much the city itself, but just because I'd like to get some good Cajun food. But not that I can't get that here, because I actually can. But it's, you know, it's just, you know, if I go down there, I can get it from there, and I don't have to pay for it. Yeah. So, I mean,
we got to start wrapping stuff up, dude.
Yes, we do. Yeah. It's 10 o'clock. Yeah, Alan. Yep.
Hey, it's great to have you on again, Alan.
I'm going to try to get back on a little more often.
You do that.
So it's a lot of times it's like depending on whether or not I can get the kids to bed before 8:30.
Right.
Understandable.
If it's bath night, sometimes that takes a whole lot longer than it should.
Is that bath night for you?
Yep.
Bath night for them. And plus, I'm playing Mr. Mom because Ashley busted her foot last weekend.
Oh, that's not good.
Oh.
So she's hobbling around. She finally got the boot this week.
Well, I hope she recovers quickly.
Yeah, she did. We were down at my mom's house last Sunday, and she was coming up the stairs. My sister and my niece were over, and they were going downstairs to look through stuff Mom was throwing away. So, you know, like, I need more garbage in my house. and we get down there, and all of a sudden, I was going down there to check because my mom's like, the dishwasher's leaking. Can you go look at it? And I'm going downstairs to go look at it, and I get to the bottom of the stairs, and like everyone's standing there, and Ashley's on the ground. I'm like, what happened here?
No.
I guess when she stepped up on the first step, she must have like twisted her ankle or something. And when it came down, I guess all the weight was on the outside, the bone on the side of the thing there, and it just snapped it, and it was just such a pain in the ass. We're like, you know. Because we're like, oh, it just hurts, so we're not doing anything. And then it finally started hurting a lot, so we're like, okay, let's go get x-rays. And there was a place in Greenbrook, that one of those Metamerge places that, you know, they said they'd do x-rays. So we're like, okay, well, let's go there. It's close. We get down there, and, you know, because we're at my mom's house, Ashley doesn't bring her wallet or anything, you know, and so she's got no ID. I'm like, oh, we can't help her. She has no ID. I'm like, she's under my insurance. I have my stuff here. I can, you know, it's not like, you know, do I look like a Honduran guy that's not going to pay you? Because it's Greenbrook and there's a lot of them. And I understand it, but like, sorry, we can't help you. So I ended up having to drive up to Flemington Medical Center, the hospital up there to get x-rays. Because I just figured there'd be less people up there than being like Somerville or Robert Blue.
Yeah. That sucks.
But. Wow. I guess the x-ray she just had, they said it looks the same, so I guess the bones haven't shifted or anything, so
that's good.
Hopefully everything will mend up pretty well.
Hope she speedy recovery, Alan.
Yes, so do I.
I hope you speedily come back next week or the week after or whatever.
Yes, I'll do my best.
Very nice talking with you.
Yeah.
Nice talking to you here. Too, Joe.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
And Alan and Pat.
But not
Joel. All right.
But not who?
Joel.
I said Joel.
Didn't I? He did. Yeah, he did.
Yeah. Well, enjoy your new cat, Joel.
You don't have to, but yes, I will. He's a good guy.
Enjoy the heat, Joe.
It's almost 100 again.
And enjoy
last day of summer.
Covering for your wife, Alan.
Yes.
It's the last day of summer.
Yeah. Wow, that's a bummer.
Yeah. All right.
Well, speaking of that, here are your promos. So I got to play out. I got to get going.
Good night, everybody.
Yeah, here are your promos.
I am short.
Oh, my God.
It's Hacker
Public.
Hacker Public Radio is a daily podcast by the hacker community for the hacker community. If you're interested in technology, creative thinking, hacking, Linux, or any kind of computer, that kind of stuff, you should listen to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.com.
Hello, my name is Matt, and I've started a new podcast called LibreQuest. I talk about Linux, general technical topics. To get the show, visit LibreQuest.org.
Can we talk about multiprocessing?
Can we talk about bandwidth clusters?
Can we talk about Web 2.0?
Just talk geek to me.
Hey, it's Deep Geek. Please come check out my podcast for my take on all things geeky. You can find us at www.talkgeektome.us. That's www.talkgeektome.us. Thank you.
Just talk geek to me.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Mm, yeah, with my tongue brush. Shut up. Just shut up.
Daddy has a gun!
It's over.
You were making it for young in the kitchen. Sushi.
Ugh. This is terrible.
Yeah, and you even played a little promo, too, because I don't think Just Talk Geek to Me is around still.
How did I get... I think I know. I think I played the wrong outro file. Yeah.
Yeah, I should email you a picture. That's probably the best way to get a picture to you of the new cat.
Oh, absolutely. I would love to see a picture of the new cat.
Yeah, he's very cute.
I love cats. I love cats a lot. I have too many of them.
Irv, I know that one.
Well, if nothing else, at least they're good eating.
I don't know. I never tried one.
Right?
Maybe they'll come out with an ice cream.
Oh, that'd be gross.
Dirty pussy cat. Or just shorten it to dirty pussy.
Meeting, so it was just the leadership, essentially. Mm-hmm. So that was a long call. We went over on that. But, and I got a new cat.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, Sparta, we put down, about a month ago. And then,
I thought you were done with cats for a while.
Well, yeah, I did too. But wife wanted one. I kind of wanted one too. But, so we found one over at, Columbus Humane Society, a black and white tuxedo cat. The name they had on him at the shelter was just bad. His original name was Niblick, which is like, okay.
That was Nibbler. That was the one from
Detroit. Right. Yeah, actually, you know what? That would have been a good name, but we ended up naming him Duke, which is a better, much better name. He's a neutered male, about a year old, and very, very, very nice so far. He's all litter trained; didn't have to mess with that. I didn't even have to show him where it was. He figured it out on his own.
Oh, yeah, they're litter trained. They know exactly where to go.
Yeah, they can just... I guess they can just smell the litter. I don't know.
Probably.
But...
I'm done with animals for a while. No room in my house now.
I want to say, you got two boys anyway, so...
I got no room now as it is.
Then, today was the first
I wouldn't
time...
have the room if I'm in if I didn't work from home, so...
Today, was the first time he came up to the office. His first time any cat came up to the office when I was working. And he actually kind of hid under the... First came in, let me pet him for a minute. Then he went underneath the recliner that I'm sitting in right now. And stayed there for a good chunk until I opened up the footrest, reached in there to pet him, and kind of grabbed him and see if he'd let me hold him for a little bit. And he's like, nah, I don't want to be held. So he kind of ran back downstairs. But and it's the first cat I've ever had where I actually bought a cat condo or a cat tree kind of thing, and he actually uses it. So he was napping in it when we were eating dinner tonight and last night too. So but he's a really good cat so far, and he's fitting in pretty nicely. So far he hasn't really picked a favorite yet. He'll kind of let all of us pat him and stuff. So
that's good. Yep. Eventually they will.
Oh, yeah. He'll probably pick a favorite eventually, and that'll be the one that'll literally follow him around. He'll follow around all the time. He acted like a little bit with me, because when I went down to hit the restroom, and then I started walking up the stairs and looked behind me, and there he was. I said, "You can come up here if you want." And he just like looked at me, watched me go up the stairs, get to the top of the stairs, or turn around, and he was nowhere to be seen. So I'm like, okay. So he's a little, I mean, we haven't only had him since Saturday, so he's a little skittish, but not too bad. You know, he's warming up to everything. He's much more relaxed than he was on day one. So, but, and then the only cat I've ever had where he only really meowed for a couple minutes once we put him in this carrier, and that's it. He's just sat there in the car, rode home.
No, he's going somewhere.
Yep. Not the one. There was a really pretty tortoise shell cat that I really would have loved to have, but she wouldn't let you. I mean, she was all, they had this one area where they were. She was just hanging out on the top shelf, and I'd reach up to pet her, and she'd walk off. All the rest of the cats in the whole place let us hold them for a little bit, too. Even Duke did, but $75 too. But
it'd be worth it in the long run.
Oh yeah, yeah, he's good. And unfortunately, I don't know if you guys heard or not. Peanut had to get his leg amputated. That's Link's dog.
Oh no, I haven't heard anything from Link in a long time. Well, I'm not on Facebook anymore, so
I don't see him. He said it cost $3,000 to do. I'm like, well, that's why.
Damn! Why did he have to get it amputated?
Yeah, cancer, bone cancer in the leg. Yeah, and he said I guess he said he can live for another 14 months after this. And I'm like, if that had been me, I'd have put him down.
Damn, you cold. $3,000.
Well, the thing is, it gonna buy him like years or something like that? That's a little bit different, but.
Man, I don't know, man. $3,000, that's a lot of
money on a dog.
Anything vet related is a lot of money.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It might,
that's Alan level of money right there. That's Alan's pocket change. $3,000.
I wish it was pocket change.
It wasn't our benefits package that we could actually get health insurance for our pet.
That's in a lot of them too. It's an extra thing that it's an add-on that you have to pay for.
But it's not. It doesn't really help that much, from what I've heard. I've talked to several people.
I think it's for like medicines and stuff. I don't think it covers surgeries and stuff, unless it's like you get hit by a car or something like that.
It's probably about the same as if you pay for Banfield's plan, which I might do because that'll at least cover the yearly vaccinations and stuff. But yeah, little Duke is he's about a year old, so he's just very much a kitten still, but not as kitten-y, you know. He's a fully grown cat, you know, but he's still kind of immature. Loves to play.
Sometimes put on that, was it Friends of Felines? It's like it's some cat rescue out in Ohio there. But it's just, they just, you know, have a good webcam with, you know, the cats all the time. Keeps my little one busy at times. Calms him down.
I wonder if that's cat welfare. Because, see, that's the first place we went to was this place called Cat Welfare, and it had like 250 cats in there.
Where is it? Let me see if I can find it here.
I tried some weird ice cream this week, too, Dan.
Penis flavored?
No.
Not that that's weird. Too weird.
No, Grey Poupon and salted pretzel.
How'd that go?
Not as bad as I thought it would. It's one of them. It's the same made by the same company that did the mac and cheese ice cream.
Oh my gosh!
Which that I never got to try because all of the stuff they make is like limited batch. So I want to try some of their.
I had some Halo Top pumpkin spice ice cream today.
Any good?
It was decent. It was decent. It was a little melty because somebody left my freezer partway open, and yeah, that was a bit of me yelling at children. but despite that, it was a little bit tasty.
Did it actually have any pumpkin in it?
I don't think so.
Okay.
It is Halo Top, so it's possible. I mean,
right.
Pumpkin is one of those things that's extremely low calorie dense, but also doesn't have a lot of flavor of its own, so I would assume that most of the flavor would come from the cinnamon and nutmeg.
It does have, it has its own flavor.
Just not a whole lot of it.
Yeah, when I make pumpkin pies, I only ever put cinnamon in it. That's it. I don't put nutmeg or allspice. I just put cinnamon. That's the main reason I do that is because that's all my mom ever did. I like that taste.
Friends of Feline Rescue Center, Defiance, Ohio.
Friends of Feline. Oh, okay.
Wherever that is, I don't know, but
it's you on the other side of the state from me. Yeah.
Look them up on YouTube. There's just cats and nothing but cats.
What's kind of one cool thing was Luke was playing Animal Crossing on our TV on the Switch, and he stopped like right in front of it and started looking at it as Luke was playing it.
Maybe we should start the show.
Yeah. I did try one other ice cream, Joe. Only because I managed to find it, and I thought I'd better grab it if I can't find it again. The Little Debbie Pumpkin Delight flavored ice cream.
By the same company?
No, that one's actually made by Hudsonville.
Oh. I'm not going to go for the Little Debbie one, just because I imagine that a pint is like 2,000 calories.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Spoonful is 2,000 calories.
No, not that bad, but still. Yeah, it's got a lot of sugar. That's the only one of them I've ever tried. The other ones I could never find because it's like,
they got a little vial of insulin taped onto the side of that thing.
Right.
Just take a dose of metformin right as I eat it,
But, how was the Grey Poupon pretzel or whatever the hell that was?
Could you taste the mustard in it?
Yeah. I don't know. Okay.
No. I mean, that's why I'm telling you. That was my first question, But did it taste as bad as I thought it might? No, it actually was kind of pleasant to me.
Huh.
The only kind of thing that was kind of weird was the pretzels weren't crunchy.
He likes the salty goodness.
The salty goodness.
What, were they soggy?
No, kind of chewy. Not crunchy.
How do you get a chewy pretzel?
I'm still trying to figure that out. Oh. The only thing I'm wondering is maybe they use gluten-free pretzels.
Your baked pretzels, aren't they a little bready and chewy?
Soft.
Well, you can have soft pretzels, but
I didn't think they were using soft pretzels, and I figured they were using, Snyder's hard pretzels or whatever.
I'm getting to the point where I can't eat them hard pretzels anymore.
Why, are your teeth falling out?
Yeah, no. My teeth suck. My teeth suck. Yeah.
Alan just pulled all his teeth out and replaced them with stones from his driveway. Remember that, Alan, on Real People? Was it Real People or That's Incredible? They had the guy that did that. I think it was Real People.
I didn't even see that, but
I knew a guy that made his own dentures.
Out of stones in his driveway?
No. He used Play-Doh to make a mold and then epoxy to actually make the dentures. And I don't know what he used for the teeth.
My sounds kid like has something
the,
my grandpa
the Play-Doh would have done. Dentist thing, but it really doesn't make very good teeth.
All right, let's start this show. This is 971.
Yep.
Good stuff. And here we go. Want to give me a count around, Joel?